This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
You have now arrived at Stadium and Gale.
Boys and girls, ladies and gents, welcome to another episode of Stadium Miguel. It's your favorite Uncle Silk.
It's Dan.
And it's Zach in for Nick today.
Zach subbing. We got some positivity in here to sub in for the negativity, man. I like the swap out. How's it going?
No negative Nick this week. Although sure. Nick's living his best life right now, we got to say.
He's letting the entire internet know, too.
Yeah. Nick did hit us in the group chat of the Stadium Miguel with Dan remark from last show saying four-star. There's going to be some beef when they get back with the four-star ratings and whatnot, man. So I like that energy. Congrats to Nick again. He out there off the grid enjoying across the pond, vibing a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah, I think he's in Croatia right now eating at Michelin star restaurants, letting everybody on the internet know. I think he was I don't think he was upset. I think he understood. I'm not trying to hit on his wife. I called his wife a high four-star, Nick a low two-star. I think she got a little offended. So apologies, Lauren. There's still time, before final rankings are due, right? That happens in what, February? Is that when you guys do them, Zach?
That's right. Evaluations are still taking place.
Exactly. Right. Shout out to Nick. Zach, how you been, dude?
I've been great, man. I just came off of a week with the fam, taking a little mini vacation, also doing some work mixed in with that, but got to see New York City for the first time, got to go to Toronto and visit some family, see my uncle for the first time since 2007, because my cousin graduated from dental school. So that was nice to get out of the country and then drive, that drive from like upstate New York all the way down to New York City was beautiful, going through the mountain ranges. I didn't even expect that when we planned the trip, that it was going to be that impressive. So, and then, getting to spend 2 days in New York for the first time, that's, it lived up to the hype. And, we really did it for our boys. Like that was a trip that they've been wanting to take for a while. So we did it, and Central Park was probably the most impressive thing I saw for sure.
Hell yeah. No, Toronto is a really cool city. If anybody has a chance to go up there as well, I'm not sure if you had a lot of time to hang out there, but New York City is definitely a place to be. But no, you're right. That that area through like the Finger Lakes, if you went there, or the Catskills is beautiful. Yes. Definitely encourage everybody to do that. It's not a trip a lot of people take or think about taking, but glad you were able to.
Yeah, there were stops on the highway where it was giving you options to do like a scenic route and get off at an exit and overlook the mountains. We didn't do it because we were jetting it to NYC, but next time we take that trip, that's gonna be planned.
I lived up in upstate New York mountains, man, in Mooresville. That's where I played JUCO ball at, bruh. The views is fire this time of year, but that's a hell of a winter, bruh. I'm telling you right now, that winter is rough.
I can imagine. Yeah, we on our way back, we thought about actually stopping at some of the scenic routes, and it rained the entire drive, like all the whole 4 hour drive that we had. And it was crazy because we thought, okay, at some point we're going to drive out of this. It's going to be like Florida, It wasn't. Like, it just rained the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, so and when you're going through the mountains, like, there are flood warnings. Like, it'd be easy, you know, to pan. So we did fine though. It was a fun trip. We'll definitely do it again.
Yeah, I gotta do that with the kids. My son's name is Harlem, so he's like, Pops, you gotta get me up there eventually. It's not the same New York that we grew up with. It's a lot cleaner, even though when you went, Nick, you're probably like, this ain't the cleanest, but it's a lot cleaner than when I was up there. But overall, outside of Central Park, what else did you enjoy in New York?
So first thing we did was pizza. I had a whole thread on the Gators Online message board, and probably 60%. Maybe more of the replies told me to go to John's of Bleecker Street. And then I looked up Dave's pizza review, and he said it was, he took a bite and was like, this is the best pizza I've had in NYC. So I'm like, all right, well, this is where I'm going. And so that was the first place we went, and it was legit. We got pizzas, we got appetizers, but I did the original, you don't call it cheese. I guess you call it plain.
Yeah.
So, but it was legit. Like, it's probably the best pizza I've ever had.
In Manhattan?
No, this was I don't know where the area was, but it was literally like directly across from Jersey City, which was where we stayed. So that's a
Greenwich Village
code, because I was trying to figure out where to stay. I did not want to stay in like the thick of it. You know, I do the opposite when I go to New Orleans. Like, I want to be right there in the thick of it. But this was a family trip. I didn't want to be near Times Square or anything crazy. So I asked some people where some different spots to stay, and a few people recommended Jersey City. And we actually stayed in the Hyatt, which was right on the river, and it was right across from New York. So at night, you could go out and see the whole city lit up. And then we were right by the train. So we just took it right over to the World Trade Center exit. We were right there. So nice. I recommend that for anybody that's never traveled there and wants to do that, and you don't want to stay in NYC, like, Jersey City was a good option. So I was impressed with that. I was also impressed with people in New York. Like, let me give a shout out to the New Yorkers. They were so nice to me.
That's different. Word. Like,
bro, we split up at one point. We both got lost, or, you know, not lost, but didn't know where we were going on the train. And, like, man, this one lady stuck her foot in between the door, and then, like, the door went to close again. And then she stuck her head in the door. Her hat came off just to tell me and my boys, like, you know, which way we needed to go.
That's what's up.
So, yeah, I was – and then my wife had the same experience, you know, with some people that she was trying – when she was trying to figure out what train to get on. So – we were very impressed. I think, you know, I know New Yorkers get all kinds of raps, but the experience we had was really good.
That's what's up.
That's awesome, man. Well, Zach, we appreciate you coming on the show today. We have Jeff Driscoll joining us today as well, probably in the next 15 minutes or so. But with that, Zach, we'll just kind of catch up with you. Obviously, if you are unfamiliar with Zach Albaverde, which I doubt that you are, but if you are, he is a writer with On Three. Previously with the Gainesville Sun, previously with Rivals.com as well. We're super excited to have Zach fill in for Nick, pardon me. But before we get into that, let's give a shout out to our friend Alan Horn with State Farm Insurance, 706-692-2888. Again, 706-692-2888. If you are looking for auto, home, renter's life, business insurance, retirement planning, whatever it might be in Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, or Alabama, you can visit him online at 706 or visit him online at allenhorninsurance.com or give him a call at 706-692-2888. All right, gentlemen, the internet's in a little bit of a frenzy right now. Not sure if you guys saw the Footballville podcast with Marco Wilson. Zach, I know you saw it. So did you see that?
Did I see the part? I seen the clip.
Did you see the clip? Yeah. That's all we're going to talk about.
I seen the clip.
They were asking him and Chad Wilson, his dad, just about the shoe toss at the LSU game. Marco said if he could do it all over again, he would throw the shoe even further. Zach, want to get your thoughts? You posted it on Three. That's the first time that I saw. What are your thoughts on what he said. A little selfish, in my opinion, but, you know, what are your thoughts?
He didn't gain any more Florida fans with that clip. You know, he's already probably one of the most hated Gators, right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I don't even know where you'd put him up there.
He's up there.
But, like, he's up there. And, you know, he's just, I guess, owning it and say, hey, I'm going to die on this hill. And, you know, it's the different approach from Dallas Baker. You know, Dallas Baker had a similar situation in the Tennessee game at Tennessee back in the day. And he's obviously come out and apologize here or there. Not to say that that's what anybody should do in that situation. But again, Marco's owning it. He's having fun with it. I know a lot of Florida fans, you know, aren't going to like that. Again, we don't know the full context of what he said. So it was just a clip, mm-hmm. but it didn't look good. But I also am not surprised because he never really seemed too remorseful about it when it happened. You know,
yeah,
but I also just think it's unfortunate because when you really get down to it, like that not only cost Florida the game, but it, you know, it probably cost them a chance to get into the college football playoff. Because if they, in my opinion, if they come into that championship game in Atlanta with just one loss and however many games they would have won in a row, and then you lose to Alabama in the fashion that they did, like, I think they would have had a strong argument to still make it. But with that loss to LSU, they didn't. So that's like, in the context of it, that's why I think Florida fans still hold on to it, this shoe toss, so much, because they mm-hmm. feel like of what it cost the team, which would, and what they felt like was a special season, or up until that point, at least.
I think it's attention seeking, man. Mm-hmm. The Florida fans, as much as we're mad about it, like, we're not talking about it on the regular. Like, it right. keeps getting brought up, being brought up by them. And I rocks with Chad in the Wilson family, but I think this is corny, man. To be real, like, you go and sit down after making a mistake like that that cost your team the game, right, or cost your team the opportunities that we just spoke on. A good character person, you know what I'm saying? Like, just keep it a bean. He's a good character person. So if you have good character, you cost your team a game. Like, what do you gain from going back and sitting down on this podcast and pretty much trying to clown your alma mater? I think it's just ignorant, to be real. I think there's nothing to gain from it outside of just Twitter and social media chaos. And at this point, bro, it's time to move on. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Whatever Marco got going on in the pros, he should probably just move on with that. But to keep going back to the same thing, I think it's just, you know, them trying to double down on the mistake that he already made. Dallas Baker had the right approach. You know, everybody make mm-hmm. mistakes. You could cost your team a game, but the response after it, you know what I'm saying? Like, are you sad for the dude that you're at war with? Because you're mm-hmm. in the trenches with other guys, right? It ain't just about Marco. It ain't just about the shoe toss, which was selfish as well. Mm-hmm. So my overall opinion of it is just, like, he's still selfish. You know, it wasn't just about you. And it's throwing the shoe is about the whole team in that whole Dan Mullen era. I'm glad it's over because the mindset of a lot of those players are just thrown off.
I don't remember, but did he ever, like, put out a formal statement after?
No, he was
captain. I know they never made him available to the media.
Yeah.
So
no, he was. I think Chad Wilson posted something on Twitter, and I remember this because the tweet's been unearthed again over the last couple of days or last couple of hours. That he feels bad. He, you know, feels like he let down the team. You know, try not to be too hard on him. He's hard on himself. I guess the biggest thing to me is
he did address it in an ESPN article right before the draft. I think.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I do remember that. But again, like, you know. He clearly doesn't have any remorse about it.
This is my thing.
He hate that he did it. I'm going to keep it a bean. He hate that he did it, but it's pride and ego at this point. You know what I'm saying? All that right now, the interview, to try and act like you don't really care about it.
Because he's gotten so much blowback for it, so it's almost like that's his response.
It's like when LeBron tried to be the evil guy, and nobody bought it, right? Like when he was trying to be the bad guy role, when he went down to Miami and tried to embrace that, nobody believed it. I think he's a good kid, and I think he hate that he did it, but at this point, he's just going to double down on it because it's just, you know, clout and what Twitter is these days, or social media is these days. Any attention is good attention.
My biggest thing is, like, you can hate UF, you can hate the fan base and everything else, but, you know, I think the bigger thing that I saw out of that comment is, like, Zach, I know you alluded to it, Silk, you did too, is you let your team down, you know, an opportunity to play, you know, in the playoff, an opportunity to have that momentum. Who knows where the trajectory of Florida goes after that, right? Obviously, we feel like Dan Mullen was going to give up regardless, but, you know, that excitement and that time and those players and, you know, Kyle Trask and the rest of the guys on that team that worked so hard and got so far and so close to have that one monumental thing happen. And I don't think that Marco Wilson's the only reason that Florida lost that game. You know, there's some personnel decisions going into that game with Kyle Pitts not playing. You know, there were certainly opportunities for Florida to put that game away at different times.
And there's
times.
A missed kick at the end, too. So, yeah. It was a hard kick that McPherson tried to make, but it wasn't just, but, you know, if he doesn't throw that shoe, the game's over.
Right, like, but you let your teammates down more than anything. Those are the people you should have cared about. But I think you guys all made good salient points there. Came up yesterday, so you know, just one of those things that, you know, on the top of the noggin right now. Want to get into something before Jeff joins us here soon. There's a lot of discussion. There's now petitions out there. That have been created. There's a lot of hullabaloo about what renovations might happen to the swamp. They announced last week that they are going to be starting a searching for an architect and an engineering firm to really kind of help them decide what $400 million worth of renovation to the swamp looks like. We've gone from, oh, this is going to be great, to, you know, UF's going to shrink the size of their stadium to about 60,000, you know, fans, and they're only going to, you know, be able to cater to rich people. So, Zach, do you have any additional knowledge about what Florida might be looking to do here? Or what's kind of your thoughts and the temperature of the conversation about the swamp right now?
Yeah, I think they're still very early in the phases of figuring out what that's going to look like. And that's not a front from them. Like, they literally don't have an architect pick. So it's really hard to say what it's going to be, because based on the conversations that I've had, whatever architect that they pick is going to dictate how they spend their money. So, you know, whatever they think they want to do or whatever they might want to do within the swamp, let's be honest, this is an old stadium. So there's, you know, there's going to be some things that they can and can't do. There's going to be some walls that need to get knocked down. There's going to be some things that have to happen in order to facilitate what it is that they're trying to accomplish. But there's going to be some things that aren't doable. And then there's going to be some things that they have to do that they might not be considering, that an architect is going to tell them. So it doesn't seem like it's going to be offsite, though. And that was something that was on the table, I think, at some point. I don't want to say it's not completely off the table, but it looks like they want to renovate the swamp, just based on the language and based on where this thing has, how this thing has progressed. But, like, you know, there was the possibility of an architect being like, yo, if you're going to spend almost $1 billion, you need to just build a new stadium, you know? So I don't think that's what they want to do, but do they knock off half of the swamp to, like, renovate it that way? Could you redo the whole student side? You know, I don't know. Like, I'm just throwing things out there. I think there are certain parts of the stadium that don't need to be touched. Touchdown Terrace, you know, the where the press box is fine. You know, I don't know how much renovation they want to do to that, but there are certain parts that I think can obviously stay, and you want to keep that feel, but they're going to transform the look. And that's going to be a fun thing to cover, y'all. That's like the fun stuff about being in college sports, is getting to be part of, like, we focus on the games and stuff, but we cover a university that's got big money to put into projects like this.
I'm wondering, like, what's the process of, like, shutting down, like, the construction? How long does it take, this rebuild?
Yeah, I mean, you got to think they did it in, you know, before Spurrier's second season. Mm-hmm. They added that whole touchdown terrace from when 90
to 91.
Yeah, and right before 91, it was ready to go. So they basically back then built the whole side, you know, and attached it to the lower bowl, or both lower bowls. So it can be done, you know, and now they got a lot much more manpower and resources and money, I think, sure, to be able to put behind it. So, you know, I do think that there's going to be a lot that has to get knocked down. Mm-hmm. You know, that, I mean, there's no way, if you're going to invest that much money, you're going to definitely transform the look. But, you know,
I want to ask you, y'all go to a lot of home games as a beat writer, or a lot of away games, I would say. Yeah. What have you seen in other stadiums that you like seeing this one?
I love how Tennessee's just a straight bowl. I mean, I know that that's not what they're going to do. Tennessee is Tennessee is the only stadium that I've seen. I haven't been to Georgia that even measures up to the Swamp, you know. But that's such an old stadium, so that's hard to compare it to. I think one good example of renovating an old, you know, old stadium is what Texas A&M has done. Theirs looks, you know, pretty impressive for, you know, what it used to be. And I didn't see it beforehand, but I saw some pictures of it. So, you know, they found a way to renovate their stadium. I don't think they're going to, you know, I think Florida's going to put a little bit more into the Swamp. And the look might be transformed a little bit more. But I definitely – one thing I don't want the Swamp to lose is how the fans are right on top of the field. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what makes it special. Like, you cannot – whatever you knock down or however you rearrange the seating, because it's probably going to get reduced in terms of the capacity, like, you still have to have just those fans beating right on top of the field, because I think that's what makes a difference in that stadium, at least.
Let's pause this stadium conversation, and I'm going to write down where we left off so we can do that. But let's get Jeff Driscoll on, former Florida Gator quarterback. Before we do that, let's give a shout-out to our friends over at thegataverse.io. If you want to support Florida Gators athletics, and support NIO, go visit gataverse.io. Next Friday, they are doing their scrimmage at Santa Fe. They are doing a whole fan fest regarding the TBT team that they're putting together with Corey Brewer, Lee Humphrey, and the like. Matt McCall is the head coach there. But again, go support them. Go support our student athletes, gataverse.io, and go buy tickets for that event this next weekend. With that being said, want to bring on former Florida Gator quarterback Jeff Driscoll onto the show. Jeff, my friend, it is a pleasure to chat with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to chatting it up a little bit.
Absolutely. Jeff Driscoll just recently signed with the Arizona Cardinals. So congratulations there, Jeff. But let's go all the way back. Jeff, you know, enroll in UF under under Will Muschamp, you and Jacoby Brissett, notably, you know, in the same class, same discussion. So, talk to us a little bit about your recruitment, how you ended up at UF, and what those last couple of months, you know, leading into to UF, and what that transition was like into to college.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. You know, recruiting's crazy. You're a top prospect, getting hit up all the time. You know, Florida has spring football in high school, so getting called out of class every day, you know, it was awesome. You know, I enjoyed it, getting to talk to the, you know, the Urban Meyers of the world, the Nick Sabans, you know, you name it. But you know, Florida being an hour and a half from home, you know, winning championships left and right, you know, great academic program, it was a no-brainer to stay home and play for the Gators. So obviously didn't get recruited by Will and his staff, but really enjoyed my time there, won a lot of games, and you know, wouldn't have changed it for the world.
What was it like, real quick, before we get into college, what was it like, you know, being recruited by Urban Meyer and then that switch over to Will Muschamp and those guys? What was that like from a recruiting standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, I started getting recruited, you know, my sophomore year in high school. And, you know, even from my sophomore year to my senior year in high school, you know, you'd be getting recruited by one guy from this school, and then by 2 years later, he'd be at another school. So, you know, I talked to a bunch of people that had gone through the process, and they all basically said the same thing. You're committing to a school, not a head coach, because they're going to change. You know, they're either going to get fired or they're going to take another job somewhere or whatever happens. So make sure your decision is based off a program and not, you know, whoever's the head coach or position coach or whatever. So I really took that into consideration. You know, obviously Urban was a great recruiter, brought in a bunch of really good prospects. But yeah, I was going to the University of Florida, you know, not going there based off who was the head coach.
Jeff, I want to ask you, I think a lot of fans, you know, you know, Will Muschamp, you know, gets hired on. Charlie Weiss gets brought in. Jacoby Brissett gets brought on board as well. And then throughout the entirety of the offseason, even through fall practice, we hear that it's a neck-and-neck race. The very first play on offense of that year, he brings both of you guys out onto the field at the same time. What's going on there, right? What are your thoughts? You know, and I know that you're going to give a good PC answer about Jacoby being a teammate and everything else, but what's going through your mind when everybody's wondering between these two great quarterbacks, who's going to be the starter, and then you guys go both brought out at the same time, and everybody's kind of looking around like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, you understand when you're going to, you know, a big school like Florida, there's always going to be competition. But, I mean, as a 18-year-old kid, you know, I was committed for a while and they bring somebody else on. You know, I was a little bit pissed off, I'm not going to lie, right? Like, I was the guy the whole time, what's going on now? So I was a little bit pissed off and, you know, Jacoby and I had a healthy competition. But yeah, I mean, it was competitive. It was, we both wanted to be out there. We both wanted to compete. And yeah, running us both out there on the same play was probably more of a, you know, just something funny that the coaching staff talked about doing to, give you guys something to talk about.
Jeff, what was it like going through that 2012 season, ultimately, you know, taking that job? And what was that experience like, just having that special year in 12?
Yeah, I mean, it was like you said, it was a neck and neck competition. Even as a freshman, when neither of us were really playing, we were competing every day in practice, you know, trying to outdo each other. And just trying to put ourselves in position to be the guy the year after. But, you know, when Will brought me in and told me that I had the job, it was an awesome feeling. But I understood there was a lot of responsibility that came with that. And, you know, just winning the job didn't mean anything until I went out and, you know, got it done on the field. And you know, we had a really good year, you know, offense, defense, and special teams. You know, I go back and talk about how important Caleb Sturgis was that season and, you know, just how well-rounded we were as a team. And, you know, it really was a special year. And, you know, I wish the college football playoff was around back then.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And then you come into 2013, you get to have this, you know, the same offensive coordinator back. You get off, you know, what seemingly was a great start before your injury. What was it like dealing with that experience and just having to, you know, have that setback in terms of your development?
Yeah, it was a bummer. You know, I had a good training camp going into 13. I don't even remember who we played in the first game, but I think I had a pretty productive day. And then we went into Miami, and, you know, it didn't go as planned. I banged up my knee a little bit, you know, left there, you know, with the brace and crutches and everything, but was able to bounce back and play the next week. And then, you know, a really, really catastrophic injury against Tennessee, kind of, it was a year lost. So it was the first time I dealt with injury. It was a long year, big recovery. But yeah, it was tough to, you know that I was about to hit my stride and, you know, just see the setback like that. It was a bummer. And then, you know, struggling as a team makes you feel a little bit worse because, you know, we struggled.
Yeah, no doubt.
Jeff, I want to ask you, you obviously, Will Muschamp, defense was strong. Offense, you know, had some good players, but a lot of different changes at the offensive coordinator position. You go from Charlie Weiss, who was there for a year, and then you go to Brent Peace, who was there for a couple years, right? 2 years, yep. And then. Yep. Finally go to who? What's
Kurt Roper?
Kurt Roper.
Kurt Roper. So go to Kurt Roper. What's that like as a quarterback trying to change offensive systems? You know, three times in 4 years. You know, they have their own terminology. They have their own plays that they want to call and schemes and styles. The you know coaching styles. What was that like as a 17, 18, 19, 20 year old to go through?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. I mean. You know, just about every college player is an immature player. They don't know it at the time, but, you know, it's one of those deals where you don't know what you don't know. And, you know, having to relearn something over and over and over again is tough because you don't get to build, right? You get to just get a baseline knowledge of each system. And then when you get to a new system, it kind of starts over. Whereas now, for myself, at least, I've been in the league 8 years. I've been in a bunch of different systems. You know, it's kind of the same deal. I've had, you know, maybe a coordinator twice in, you know, two seasons. But now I understand how different word. So I think just, you know, as a young kid, it's hard, right? So not being able to go to the next level and unlock some of that potential that was in there, you know, not just for me, but for every position, it makes it tough. And, you know, if we would have played a little bit better on offense, maybe we wouldn't have, that wouldn't have been the case.
Jeff, sure. A lot of people probably don't remember, you know, especially some of the kids. But when you coming out, you was that guy. And we're coming fresh off of Tim Tebow running that Urban Meyer offense. And you can see a lot of similarities in your game. So just seeing your size, seeing your skill set, and me and my mindset as a fan thinking, yo, this kid get into an Urban Meyer offense. Like, we're going to be right back in the thick of national championship vibes, man. What do you sometimes look back and think about if you had played in Urban Meyer offense instead of Charlie Weiss's
or Urban for 4 years? Man, I would have loved to see Jeff in that offense for 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, one of your you know, you said there that you were thinking as a fan we would be right in the national championship vibe. I mean, don't get it twisted, we were. I mean, we were right there, right? We went into the bowl game, number 3 in the country. I think we rattled off like 7 or 8 wins in a row during the season. So, I mean, we were right there. It wasn't maybe the same style that, right. You know, they were getting it done when Urban was there, but, you know, we were there to win games and we were doing that. So, I mean, I think we had a really good year in 12, obviously in 13 injuries and stuff piled up. But yeah, I mean, I've had that conversation time and time again that, you know, that happens in this world. And, you know, I'm still sitting here 8 years into the NFL. So that was always a goal, was to, you know, have a really good NFL career and extend it. And, you know, I still feel like I got a lot left in the tank, but, yeah, one of those deals where who knows what it would have looked like, but, you know, I'm happy the way that it played out like it did.
Zach. What was your mindset like when the defense was, cause you say we were in the thick of things but it was the defensive led and a running game led team. What was your mindset like when the offense was struggling a little bit and the defense was holding things down?
Yeah, I mean, we were doing what we were asked to do. We were winning the games, right? Like, ask a punter. If a punter goes out there and punts 0 times, doesn't help the team win, like, are they going to be upset? Obviously, we're out there to score as many points as we can, but at the end of the day, we wanted to play conservative football. We wanted to control the clock, and we wanted to, you know, hit big plays when they were there. And for the most part, we did that. Obviously, there was games where we didn't score as many points as we would have liked to, and we left some stuff out there. But, you know, we were winning games, and that's football. You know, as a competitor, you want to be out there, and you want to be the one contributing to winning the game and throwing the touchdown pass at the end to win the game. But, you know, it's the ultimate team sport, and, you know, I think we really had that mindset as a team that year. And even though we heard it from the fans, we heard it from the media, we were winning games.
Right.
Jeff, we now live in the transfer portal era where guys now have the, you know, freedom to move around, and we see how beneficial it can be. Obviously that was something that was really big for you, making the move to Louisiana Tech. Thinking back to that decision, you know, what all went into that, just kind of wanting to get a fresh start. Obviously there was a coaching change, like, so you had to deal with that dynamic, but how much did that do for you just to be able to go out there? You knew you had the talent, And then go out there and have a 4,000-yard season and just, you know, have some success before being able to move on to the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, it was a super difficult decision. I love the University of Florida. I loved my time there. You know, I love the guys that I played with. Loved everything about it. But I had a candid conversation with myself and my family and said, hey, if my goal is to get to the NFL, you know, you have to have production. You know, you're not just going to get there on potential. So I had to go somewhere where I was going to have the opportunity to go produce. And, made a relatively selfish decision to go to a place that was going to let me cut it loose, you know, running ball, throwing the ball. And, it worked out, but it was definitely not easy. Happy I made the decision and really enjoyed my time in Ruston as well. But it was a tough decision to make, and it was totally one for myself. And, it was hard because I've always had a team mindset. But, happy I made that decision when I did.
Jeff, I want to talk about your time in the NFL now, and then most recently. Like I said, you got signed by Arizona, but let's go back a bit here. Get drafted by the 49ers. only there for a little bit, I think, right up into the season started there in 2016. You go to the Bengals, have a good few years there. You've been with the Lions, the Broncos, Texans. I want to talk a little bit about you playing tight end there with the Texans for a little bit and now with Arizona. What's been like in the NFL, and what's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, I mean, you just rattled off like six or seven teams that I've been on. And, that's kind of what it's been, right? I got to the league in San Francisco. I wouldn't say I wasn't prepared, but it's a lot thrown at you immediately. And, I just didn't go out and perform very well in training camp and, got cut. And, you learn a lot of new terms in the league if you have to go through a bunch of transactions. So I got claimed, the next day after being waived and didn't really know what that meant. That said, hey, they said, hey, you're going to Cincinnati. I was like, that's awesome. And, got thrown in week one, learned a lot, my call it redshirt year, was with Andy Dalton for 3 years, learned a lot from him, became a really good friends with him and his family. And really enjoyed my time in Cincinnati. Was fortunate enough to get in the game a handful of times, in the 3 years that I was there, mm-hmm. which, some backup QBs go 3, 4, 5 years without getting a snap.
Yeah, Chase Daniels doing it for like right. a decade and a half.
Chase Bank, baby. but Jeff, yeah, I mean,
Jeff, what are your thoughts on Skyline Chili while we're here?
Yeah, I mean, it's different,
Yeah, okay, cool.
It's something like that you have to explain to somebody, right? It's chili, but it's really a sauce that goes on spaghetti or hot dog. So it's a whole deal.
And it has.
But yeah, I enjoyed my time there, and was able to get some really valuable.
Lost him on the chili question.
He'll be back.
Oh, there we go.
All right. We're back. Maybe. It's the Skyline Mafia coming
out. Yeah, Skyline. They heard us. Skyline heard us and they tapped in.
Get him out of here.
No, sorry about that. What was the question? I don't even know what I was talking about.
We were just talking about chili, but then you were talking about, but I interrupted you when you're talking about your time in Cincinnati and being able to at least get the opportunity to play while you're there for a few years.
Valuable experience, game reps are gold. So I was able to get some experience and, put some good film out there, able to go to Detroit after I got hurt. I was able to get in the game again. Stafford hadn't gone out of a game in like 5 or 6 years. And, he went out there during the end of the year and was able to play in some games there, which was awesome. And then, same thing in Denver. I get thrown in week two, play for a couple games and then, go to the Texans and play a little tight end, which was interesting. I know you're going to want to touch on that a little bit. And, now getting the opportunity to go to Arizona. Had a really good OTAs and looking forward to training camp. So been around the country. It's been an awesome experience. And, I think my best ball is still ahead of me. I'm 30, which is like a dinosaur in football, but not so much for a quarterback. So I think I think I still got my best ball ahead of me.
You were a baseball prospect as well coming out, right?
I was.
You got drafted.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys wrote a story about that as well. Is he going to quit football and go play baseball? And
Right.
You know, it was one of those deals where I was like, hey, if they're going to give me money to sign for my rights, and I told them point blank, I don't want to play baseball, and they still wanted to give me money, I was like, I'll do it.
Bring it on.
Yeah.
So I, too, have now made myself eligible for the for Major League Baseball draft. They want to give me
money. Yeah, watch your phone. There's like 40 rounds. So when you get down to like round 29, when I got drafted, they're like every 30 seconds. So, you know, make sure you don't blink.
Yeah.
What was it about baseball? Just wasn't your sport. You just love baseball, football more.
I really like both. You know, it was one of those deals. Like you said, I was that guy coming out of high school. Right. I was the man, you know, in my head, I was going to be 3 years, you know, win a Heisman or two and then get drafted first overall. So that was the path that I, you know, was hoping that I would be on, and it didn't turn out like that. But, you know, we all have our paths, and, you know, mine's still going, fortunately.
Did you ever spend any time with the Florida baseball team? Did you ever do like a spring with them at all or anything?
I never did. You know, when I was getting recruited, that was one of the things that I was telling teams was, hey, I want to play both in college. And if, you know, you guys say no, it's basically a deal breaker. And everyone was like, yeah, sure. Just come on. We'll figure it out when you get here. And, you know, I got to school and I figured out what it was like to be an SEC quarterback. And, you know, I quickly realized that I wasn't going to be able to do both. I also like to go to Midtown a little bit too. So yeah. I wanted to have a little space. Yeah.
So that was my question or follow-up, should I say. Florida's already got one quarterback on the team that does both, Max Brown. You remember Gavin Dickey back in the day, he did it.
Yep.
And then they've got a 5-star quarterback committed, DJ Lagway, kind of same profile as you, man, who's actually planning to play both sports. And I think, you know, Sully's going to give him the chance. Just having been a quarterback at Florida, and note, like, can you imagine how tough that is to juggle? And is that something that you can do?
I mean, it's been proven that it can get done, right? And you look at Kyler Murray.
Yep.
You know, he did it at a high level. You look at Jameis, you look at, you know, a ton of other people. You know, for me, I didn't think that was the best decision for my future. Sure. Who knows if that was the right decision? You know, I could have made a bad decision, but, you know, at the time I wanted to be all in football, and, you know, I think it was the right decision. I don't know.
Yeah. You wanted to have an off season too, like you said.
That's right. I wanted a little time. Go to the estate's pool parties and play pool basketball as well.
Yeah. I heard that.
Jeff, in the last two seasons of football, the Florida Gators have had a former quarterback convert to tight end. One was Tim Tebow, and then number two was Jeff Driscoll. How did that happen last season?
Yeah, I mean, you're forgetting Felipe as well. I think he's kind of
Felipe Franks, three. Jeez.
Hang on one sec. My kid is running out here.
Yeah, my kids run for mom like that too, man.
She's not happy. She usually runs the other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those deals where it's pretty apparent, like 6'4", 6'5", 235, 240. You know, it's pretty apparent that I could be able to do another position. You know, workout warrior, fast, strong, jump, can do everything. So I, you know, started doing some scout team stuff just to, you know, just show that I can do more than play quarterback and try to get on the field somehow, some way. And, you know, it was working, you know, on scout team, I was doing well, started to do some special teams, and I was showing up on special teams. So they approached me and said, hey, do you want to do this? And I was like, I want to figure out a way to get on the field. And if this is the fastest way to get on the field, I'll do it. So that's how that happened. It wasn't a deal where I was giving up on playing quarterback. I always knew I had the skill set and the potential to get it done. Just needed more opportunity. But yeah, I'm a football player. I'm a competitor. And if they say, hey, this is your best chance to get on the field, I'll take it.
It's something about those Florida quarterbacks too, man. Because we rattled off a bunch, but you also had Trey Burton.
Mm-hmm.
You had Jordan. Yeah, Jordan Reed. Who you played with. Yep. I mean, it's just,
they tried Tim, but Tim was like, nah, I'm cool, man.
No, he did it though.
He did it. He was out there. He was out there trying to block. You know, the first couple of days of me blocking didn't go so well. So I'm happy that wasn't a meme like his.
And Jeff, obviously, moving forward, you got your new opportunity, and you said you feel like your best ball is ahead of you. Kind of what's your mission, I guess, moving forward, and kind of what you want to accomplish in Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, I think my mission going into every season is the same. One is to make the team, right? That's not an easy thing to do. There's 90 really good football players on every roster right now, and it's going to get down to 53 pretty quickly. So that's my first goal is to make the team. And then second is just to contribute into winning games, whatever that looks like. You know, if I'm the guy out there, that would be great. That's what I would love to do. And that's what I set my mind to every year. But there's only one guy out there at a time. So if it's contributing in the film room or, you know, spending some time with the guy that's out there, or, hey, if it is the special teams tight end kind of deal that I've done in the past, you know, I want to help contribute to winning games.
Mm. You ever run into Jacoby Brissett after a game while you've been playing in pros?
Yeah, I've ran into him a handful of times. It's always good to see his successes. I've been cheering for him the whole time. You know, even when he went to NC State, I always followed his career. And then in the NFL, it's been awesome to see his successes. So, you know, we always, you know, go say hello, give a little hug, little joke or whatever. And yeah, he's following me as well. So it's been cool to, you know, see both of us stay in it as long as we have.
When's the last time you made it back to Gainesville?
So I actually went in the spring. My daughter has gotten into volleyball a little bit. Not the one that just ran out here, the older one. She's gotten into volleyball a little bit. So, you know, I kind of took the first opportunity that I could to get her to Gainesville and brought her to a spring volleyball game. And and while I was there, I went over to the spring football practice. And I was super, super impressed by the new facility. Super impressed by, you know, what Coach Napier's got going. And it was good to get back. They really rolled out the red carpet and made me feel at home.
That's dope.
That's awesome, man.
That's awesome, man. Well, Jeff, man, we really appreciate your time today. Certainly best of luck with everything that you got going on in your personal life. Best of luck with everything with the Cardinals, man. And we'll be rooting for you. I know that you have a lot of very faithful fans of your time here at the University of Florida, man. We appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And when I was backstage before you guys let me on, you guys were talking a little NIL. If there's any type of back pay on that, you guys let me know.
Yeah, you'd have a crazy bag, number one, coming out like you were, bro.
Oh, man. This back porch would look a little bit different right now.
Yeah, reparations, man.
Gatorverse. All right, guys. We need to get in with the Gatorverse.
Yeah. All right, man. I appreciate you guys. And yeah, I'm always pulling for the Gators and, you know, proud alumni. So. Appreciate you guys.
Awesome. Catching up, man.
Talk to you soon, Jeff.
Take care.
Bye. All right.
He was actually one of the first recruits I ever interviewed in this industry. I covered the first guy I ever interviewed was AC Leonard.
Man.
By the AC, man.
And he was, and Jeff was the second. And the only reason I remember is because I went to the Gainesville Nike regional camp and covered him. And then he committed to Florida the next day. As like you guys said, he was the guy back then.
He was
five star, man. Like, I love your question. So he didn't really go there. He kind of mentioned that, well, we were in contention, but listen, dude, if he would have played in Urban Meyer system, bro, he would have had a different Florida career. Mm-hmm. For sure.
We the one natties out there. Hey, that defense was crazy. The talent we had on that roster, man, that was insane. All we needed was but he also spoke about like how conservative the game plans was, and that he was just playing behind what Muschamp wanted was a conservative offense.
Sure.
You know, 3 yards in the cloud of dust and play some defense.
It's
good for him and Jacoby that they, despite their experience, they both went on the NFL.
Still in the league, man. Yeah, still in the league.
Actually, that's how I knew that the Will Muschamp era would never survive and why he'd never be a good college coach is because he brought both out.
Yeah, you had two NFL quarterbacks and couldn't make it work.
That's crazy.
Just nuts. Man. Just nuts. But putting them both out on the field, very first play, just –
you're trolling the fans, man. Coaches be trolling fans as well. Dan Mullen trolled us, Muschamp trolled us. Some of these coaches just do things. They play with the roster or put in or just to, you know, tease the fans a little bit.
But Damian Pierce had a good attitude about it, who was one of the people that was part of the troll jobs, because
right,
everybody was calling for him to get more carries, and then Dan just refused to do it. Never once gave him double-digit carries in a game in 21.
Now he gets reminded every Sunday. Every Sunday he gets reminded.
And then you ask Damian about it, and he goes, I got less tread on my tires.
Let's get back to the discussion we have. We got to pay sponsors real quick, or they got to pay us. Let's give a quick shout out to our friends at Home Field Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. Use promo code Stadium and Gale at checkout. 15% off of your first order. Some of the best vintage Gators clothing that's going to be out there from a logo perspective. They have golf, track and field, football, some stuff from the 80s, 90s. And they're going to have more and more fun stuff out there. They got some fun and gun stuff. Go check it out. Football season's right around the corner. Super lightweight cotton. You can definitely wear it in the swamp, both the swamp that we have now and definitely the newly renovated swamp here in a couple years. But again, go check out homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale for 15% off of your order. Want to pick back up onto the conversation about the swamp, and we ended with Zach, you saying that you wanted to make sure that the fans were still close to the field, and I definitely think that that's something that Florida has. We are probably amongst the closest when it comes to not only the way that Ben Hill Griffin is built, and it just kind of goes up instead of really out way that like maybe Tennessee does, but that the fans are so close to the sideline there. So I think that that's something. I don't imagine in $400 million that you're going to have massive structural changes to the actual bowl that's there right now. You're going to probably renovate seating. You might add some things. You might move some things around from a concourse perspective. Yeah. But at $400 million, you're not going to be able to build a new stadium. So I don't imagine the walls will be moving in and out anywhere too differently. But I just want to pick up the conversation.
If they stick at 400, though.
Say what?
I said if they stick at 400.
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
I know there was talks about maybe building an entire new football field, maybe where the Bostic golf course is right now.
Yeah.
I know UF's starting to maybe look to see where UF golf might be. I'm not saying that those are things that are for sure happening, but the word on the street is that could be an opportunity as well.
And I mean that's gonna be part of the consideration, and is what's the best way for us to spend our money. And they're going to let off. Yeah.
Damn, mother had us a studio. What happened to that, man?
Well, it's a VR room instead, but I don't even think that gets used. If they would have put a studio in there, it would have been game. Those guys, you'd have had a third of the team that would never left the facility.
Well, we need them in the weight room, not the studio, Zach.
That's true. I'm talking as a rapper.
Want to get your thoughts. This kind of prevailed over the weekend too. A couple of different media outlets, both noted and just podcasters out there, started to put together their 14, their SEC quarterback rankings. A lot of folks putting Graham Mertz at 14. Zach, I know that you and I were chatting at Nick's wedding. We just don't think Graham Mertz is that bad. Do we think that he's going to win the Heisman Trophy? Probably not. But what are your thoughts on Graham Mertz being ranked 14 out of 14 in the SEC?
Pro Football Focus disagrees with that. And again, PFF is not the be-all, end-all, and I know a lot of people don't necessarily subscribe to them, but I know that the Florida staff does, and they've used their grades and mentions and stuff like that and graphics before. So, they rank Graham Mertz fourth among SEC returning quarterbacks just strictly based off his PFF grade, which is 75.3, which is actually, believe it or not, in the top 10 among all the players on Florida's roster, 75.3. So he's not as bad as people think he is. And, I think that number 14 ranking is a little low. Put some respect on Graham's name. Man. He's a 3-year starter.
Yeah, good or really bad news. Push the media. But I don't. I keep saying I don't see Mertz being that bad. 14th overall. I think some of the stuff we're getting with Graham Mertz, people's expectations being so low, is just because of who just left, right? You have AR leaving. And they're like, okay, this is the guy that replaces AR. Like, can he flip? Can he jump over people? Does he run a 4.440? No, he don't do any of that. But he probably.
Could I still think he shouldn't have taken the number. That's just my opinion.
With 15, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's just hard to overcome that number, right?
He said when he showed up, it was in his locker. Billy put it there for him. See, Billy, I'd have been like, no, man, I'm 5. My Instagram is Graham Mertz 5. I need 5. It's open. You know, you don't want that number.
No, I think he'll be fine. I don't think he have to worry about expectations being that high, right?
Yeah, that's true.
He could have just done himself a little bit of better service with getting a different number. But I think as long as he come in and hit the dump offs, the slants, there's a lot of throws that we took out of the offense last year that we couldn't do because, you know, AR lacked a lot of touch. So, and overall, the defense is going to be better. I don't think we're going to have to lean on Graham Mertz to go win football games. So, overall, I think the team did upgrade. But the quarterback position, obviously, there's a talent drop off from last year.
The only thing that I will say, people ask me a lot, I've been asked, is there anything that he'll do better than AR? Because he's not going to, there's a lot that he's not. Right. He's not more talented than him. He doesn't have better athleticism. Like, athleticism isn't even in the same ballpark. The one thing that early on he might be able to do that AR couldn't until later in the year, in my opinion, was just the processing of the offense and some of the stuff that AR just has a first-year starter, starting for the first time on the road in the SEC, starting for the first time in the Swamp. Like, he struggled against USF in Kentucky with certain aspects that Graham just simply should not as a 3-year starter. Right. Like, he's not that green to where he's going to go through those things. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, because I feel like over the course of the season, AR figured out those things, and obviously he showed up and had some incredible performances. But Graham's not going to have those growing pains early in the season. So that's one thing that he should be able to come to the line of scrimmage and recognize a bad look and, you know, and check them out of it. He should be able to, like you said, make some easy reads and dump offs and stuff. And that's really – what they're going to ask the most of him to do. They're not going to ask him to throw 33 times a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Obviously
want to make sure. Or certainly run the ball.
Yeah. No, I think from a mental perspective, he's obviously been through a lot, you know, hope that he can have that mentality. If there is a mistake, to not let that mistake carry over. Right. Some of the things that I know, especially early on last season with AR, you know, you just kind of saw him just, not that I don't think they had the mental ability to do it. It's just sometimes he just looked like he was kind of just off to the side, sulking, and just kind of being able to make sure.
He straight up said it, you know, when I did the video feature on him before the draft. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, but I checked out. I wrote it after the Kentucky game because that's what people told me he did. And then he said it, like, mentally, I was out of it in the Kentucky game. Like, that's not something that Graham, as a veteran starting quarterback, is going to – those aren't mental loops that he's going to have to go through. So, you know, we'll see what type of difference that can make early on in the season. You know, hey, that first game, he's got to go on the road in a really tough environment. I think Florida's going to be lucky to have him, though, because if you were going into that game with Jack Miller, that's a totally different conversation, you know, just in terms of the experience.
I like us going on the road, though, start the season off, man. A lot less pressure. I'm not afraid of that stadium. Most of our kids should be able to handle that crowd. They play in the SEC. I think all the pressure's on those guys, and I like that. You know, you're going out there with a defense, a quarterback that's coming off an ACL injury. If he's playing, still trying to follow and monitor that as well. But I like us on the road with a fresh new defense, an aggressive play caller, a running game, and I'm not afraid of that loud stadium. But Utah's going to bring a stick. But I like where we at, and I like our position for sure.
Absolutely. We've got just a few more things to talk about here. I want to give a quick just update. from the baseball draft that started yesterday, 2023 Major League Baseball draft. Wyatt Langford draft fourth overall to the Texas Rangers. The slot value there is about $7.7 million. Hurston Waldrop to the Atlanta Braves. And I got a lot of Braves fans that listen here. So congratulations to him. Slot value is $3.27 million. Brandon Sproat goes 56th overall to the New York Mets with a slot value of $1.47 million. So congratulations to them. I want to talk a little bit about recruiting, but before we do that, let's give a quick shout out to our friends over at Alumni Hall on Archer Road, or go visit them online at alumnihall.com for your largest and best selection of officially licensed Florida Gators apparel, hats, Yetis, accessories, and gifts. You can earn rewards for future purchases with their Hall Pass Rewards program as well. So go get your Nike Champion Columbia Coaches Polo sideline gear and more at alumnihall.com or Alumni Hall in Gainesville, Florida on Archer Road. Gentlemen, we have an announcement looming today for four-star offensive tackle Fletcher Westfall. But before we talk about that, Zach, give us your thoughts on where the Gators are at this year from a recruiting perspective. Obviously, it's been a year like Florida hasn't had in a long time recruiting. But just give us kind of your overall view, and then tie that into Fletcher there at the end.
Yeah, I mean, this is this is where they need to be at. This is what one of the reasons Billy was hired, was to have these type of recruiting results, and they've had them. Like their month of June was incredible. They set a new standard for official visits. At least in the modern recruiting era, 17 official visitors was the most that Florida's ever had. Now, I don't know about back in the days, like Charlie Pell and if they used to bring a bunch of guys into one weekend, but that's never been done, 17 in one weekend. And then they follow that up with actually landing those guys and then guys in the weekends to follow. I think the whole event, or should I say just the experience that went down at Spurrier's, where three guys committed at the restaurant, you know, in front of everybody, like that's that to me kind of spoke to how this thing is trending and the momentum that this staff is starting to build on the recruiting trail. They were already had some elite commits in the class, but then to actually deliver throughout the OVs, to get, Waller, you know, one of the top players in the country. I thought that was really impressive, and they're not done yet. They're going to, I think, get Fletcher today, which will give them four offensive linemen, and I think a really solid class. A lot of these guys are maybe not ranked as high outside of Fletcher, but I mean, for Fletcher, they beat Clemson and Georgia and Arkansas. For Marcus Maskell, they beat LSU, and then for Mike Williams, he's a former South Carolina commit that they beat Miami for. So those are some big recruiting battles that they won for those offensive linemen. And then they get the guy from Germany as well that they went out there and scouted. So they know what they're getting from him. So
and then Bama just got the number two player in Germany, some linebacker. I was like, hey, yes, man. Yeah, Saban's slipping a little bit, man.
Yeah, that's a new talent pool that I think Florida's starting to tap into. They, like I said, they literally went out there and saw that kid. So it's not like, you know, they just took some project. So the recruiting that they've put together, they're doing their homework. Their evals are impressive, and then they're obviously getting elite guys as well. Obviously DJ Lagway is the headliner, but they got a bunch of top 100, top 60 guys in this class, and once the cookout rolls around, they'll probably get a couple more commits. They'll be at 17, with Fletcher, or excuse me, 18 with Fletcher. Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have 20 plus commits going into the season, and then only looking to land, a few select guys throughout the fall to kind of top it off and make it, a consensus top five, top three class, which is what I think it can be.
despite, because we don't know where to see how the season's gonna play out, Zach. But say the season goes south, what is this staff selling these recruits, and what's the likelihood of the class sticking together?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, these guys are committing to a program that's coming off back to back 6 and 7 seasons, so it's already looking bad. If we're talking about the product on the field, like, these guys are clearly committed to the vision. They're clearly committed to the opportunity. They're committed to the roster rehaul. they know what's happening and why they're being brought in. So I think that if it's a really bad year, that might just, give them justification for their decision about if that factored into it, about feeling like I can go in and play right away because this roster is not where it needs to be. I also don't think that they would have too many guys that could be poached. I think the ones that have a priority left, the running back, I think the linebacker that committed at Friday Night Lights,
Aaron Childs.
Yeah, he might be one that they have to hang on to just because, he's pretty far out of state coming from Maryland. And you got to think that there's going to be some other schools closer to home that are going to be fighting until the end. And he just showed up and committed on his visit first time. So to me, he's a guy like I think they'll have to hang on to. But I mean, looking at their list, the running back, Daniels, they're going to have to hang on to him. But I think having Waller committed is going to help with that. They're two friends out of Mississippi. But most of their class, I think, will stick, especially the elite guys, which is important.
Right.
Let's see. Zach, you think UF takes, what, about 24, 25 guys this class?
Yeah, I don't know if they'll get to 25 unless they have I crunched the numbers a while back, but, they're going to have a good amount of attrition after the season to sign a full class.
They got some names.
Yeah, I mean they could sign. I mean, the limit's not an issue anymore. You can sign as many as you want. It's just the scholarship count. Like, how do they stay under 85? And you also you don't want to sign your full scholarship amount just off your higher. Like, they're gonna save at least you would think 2 or 3 spots at a minimum for the transfer portal. I think 23, 24 in that range.
All right, so Florida's at 17 right now. Zach, we brought it up that Fletcher Westfall is going to announce his decision today. This is on Monday at 11:45 or so. He is a 4-star prospect out of Leesburg, Virginia, so not far outside of the D.C. area. 6'8", 335 pounds. Finalists include and where he took visits, Arkansas, Clemson, Florida, Georgia, and Auburn. Arkansas, obviously, their head coach is a former offensive line coach. Clemson, obviously, been a very strong program over the last 10 years. Georgia, we get it. And then Auburn as well, right? So Florida's going head-to-head with some really tough talent there. But right now it does look like Florida's in a good spot to land him. Certainly we don't know. There's been a couple crystal balls that have rolled in over the last few weeks. He visited UF, I think, back on the 16th of June. So it's been a few weeks. He did visit Arkansas after, visited Clemson beforehand. Has a bunch of offers from all over the country. Ranked as the number 20 offensive tackle in the country, or 23 offensive tackle if you look at these composite rankings between 247 and On3. But really good prospect. Any thoughts there, gentlemen?
Billy stuffs Kirby into a locker with Dabo. Yeah. That's
with
what
Dabo.
I think.
With yeah, the, yeah, man. A good competition to be in. A kid that's plays offense and defense in high school, but you can see the talent, the feet, the mean street. I don't want to go too deep. I want to make sure we get the commit before I start hyping them up too much. But would be a good haul. I know the fans are at Stapleton and Rob Sells neck about the star ranking of kids that they're bringing in. Having two
look at who they're beating.
Right. That also counts. But we got a 4-star. I did say, I've been saying I want us to get a 4-star in our arsenal. to close this class out with the offensive line. I think we still have an opportunity at another four-star, I think, with Seton at IMG. But
the one thing I'll say with that is I think what negates that is when you get somebody like Goodwin in the portal and a value transfer of Micah's, you know, value. Right. Because, right. like, I mean, he's basically like a five-star transfer, you know,
right.
Micah. And then Goodwin's more of a, you know, he's going to have to develop. But, like, you might as well have signed a five-star, you know, the year before. If you, you know, so now you can't rely on that.
Right.
But I agree with you. Like they have that's like the one knock I think that's still been out there on Florida recruiting is the O line. But to me,
been that way for a while, not just these coaches.
Yeah, but years. to me the way that they, first of all the product that they put on the field last season speaks for right. itself, and then right. the you know finding Osiris Torrance, you know, in Miller, Louisiana, and turning him and putting a brick in the stadium like. That speaks for itself. And then I think, again, just flipping that position after losing four starters, you know, in the past, you lose four starters, like your offensive line is about to take a step back. And that might not happen with this year because of, you know, the guys that they brought in. If Mazuka is ready to go week one, that's going to be a good line.
Looking forward to it. All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts before we get out of here today? Zach, thanks so much for filling in for Nick.
Absolutely.
Your positivity was appreciated.
No, it was obviously good. Always good hanging out with y'all, man. And it was cool to see Jeff. You know, I covered him, I mentioned as a recruit, but I covered him during those tough years, man. He you know, he was one of those quarterbacks that had a difficult experience at Florida, but, you know, he rebounded and made the most of it.
I was going to ask him to unblock me, but I was like, that's probably not the place or time for that.
No, I was glad he was a good sport though, man. Like, you know, it's a shame Herb had to leave.
Right.
They'd have done some damage.
For sure.
They would have really won that national championship. In
yeah,
2012.
Man, his whole career. And that's just how fragile it'd be with these coaches. I know he said, choose a program, but you also got to choose an offensive system, defensive systems. And he got the bad end of that deal, I would say. We do have some decisions coming up, I think, soon. Teddy Foster made a top three, mm-hmm. The defensive back out of Sarasota of Carolina Gators and Miami. I don't think he's visited Miami yet, but he has visited Carolina and us.
Yeah, no, I still really like Florida's chances there. I think that decision gets announced here pretty soon. I know he's trying to maybe get down to Miami, but I love – Florida's chances with Teddy Foster.
What do you think about Jordan Ross? Real quick, I know we're about to get out of here, but Jordan Ross, defensive end, he's been hinting at some possible decisions, and but he don't have an exact timeline. What do you think about him being added to the commit list, Zach?
Yeah, don't sleep on Florida. I haven't covered him as closely as Keith Niebuhr, but he's basically said from, you know, the time that he went out to go see him and then following up with him, Florida is a real player here. And that would be, we talk about, you know, recruiting competitions and who do you beat. That would be a huge upset if they find a way to get that pledge.
I'm talking Grease if we get him, bro. It's
oh, man.
The defensive hall might be crazy. Linebacker, I think, is all time. You add Jordan Ross, possibly LJ McCray, who I would like to add before the summer ends as well. Maybe get him, Zay and Mincy on board. And you're talking about a solidified number two class heading into the fall. But it could be
all. And then you have all those guys recruiting Jeremiah Smith.
Right?
Listen, they're not going to give up on that kid. That recruitment is going down. He is not 100% committed to Ohio State. I will say that.
Fans need to start crowd surfing an NIL package for Jeremiah Smith. Like, get the GoFund going and pass it around on Twitter. We'll get it going a little bit here.
Yeah. Sorry, Driscoll. No NIL bag for you, bro.
Man.
Man. All right, gentlemen. Zach, we always do Song of the Week. You are the special guest today. So you think about what Song of the Week you want here briefly. But before we do, again, Alan, go, say what?
Got to give him some Zach heat.
Yeah, got to. It's only right.
Yeah.
Again, go check out Alan Horn with State Farm Insurance, our friends over at Gataverse.io. Go buy tickets for that, for the practice, for the TBT team, as well as the fan fest that they're having. Tickets are really cheap, really inexpensive, allows you with your family to be able to go and have a good time. Our friends over at homefieldapparel.com, promo code Stadium and Gale, and Alumni Hall and alumnihall.com. Zach, what do we got today, brother?
Let's do let's do Peaceful Place by Zachariah, which is it's where I'm at right now, coming off vacation. And let's play the song while Lamar Jackson's still playing for the Ravens, so that verse is relevant.
Yeah. We didn't do a life wallet segment. Sorry, Harrison. We'll update you next week, man.
Oh, it's terrible. We're hitting record lows every week, Harrison. Every week. You know what is cool to think about Florida looking at potentially renovating the swamp and having $400 million is that A, we have the money to do it, and B, it's not our efforts aren't being led by a rogue soon to be SEC investigated attorney, CEO, whatever he is. So it's good up here in Gainesville. I hope his endeavor to build the homeless shelter in Gainesville is still on the top of his mind too. He talked very greasy about Florida, and he's been missing over the last few months. Still waiting on this Q. Let's see, what are we at? Q4 financials. It's been 1 year and 6 days since he last issued any sort of financial report on his business. So things are not great in life, Wallace. So Harrison, appreciate you checking out and being concerned about my retirement. So gentlemen, we will see you guys at the same corner, same time next week. Zach, we appreciate you filling in for Nick.
Absolutely. Take care, fellas.
Think of a place that's really perfect. Your own happy place. Go there, and all your anger will just disappear.
Hey. Got the vibes now.
Yo, I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race. You can see it in my face when the needle breaks.
Every time.
So I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race. You can see it in my face. Hey. You can see it in my face when I'm pissed off. I get rude when my mood start to crisscross. 1 minute I be chilling, the next I'm a wreck from the stress I be feeling. That's why I left the building. I needed to escape. I'm always on the go, and sometimes I need a break, but I never hit the brakes. I just take a detour, headed to a new spot. I've been trying to see more. So much I can do, there's no way for me to be bored. Pursuit of happiness, I can never be like Eeyore. Gotta go explore, so I'm flying out to be more to see Lamar Jackson in action. He threw for 3 scores and he ran for 3 more. Never seen that before. Then the next day I went walking by the seashore. Life is such a reward, only if you keep your mind in the right place, like fingers on the keyboard. Yo, I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race. You can see it in my face when the needle breaks.
Every time.
So I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race, you can see it in my face. Hey. Especially when I'm stuck in traffic. Dude try to cut me off and I ain't gonna have it. I'm about to flick him off while I roll past him. Now I'm almost crashing, swerve with my backhand. Now I'm in the fast lane. 100 seconds later, police asking for my last name. I ain't have my driver's license, so I had to call it. Now I got $400 coming out my wallet. Not an alcoholic, but I need to get a drink so I can clear my mind. I can't really think. It happens every time I get pushed to the brink. I be feeling on edge and I'm looking out of sync. But I don't need a shrink,
no.
I just need some fresh air. Walking through the woods cause I never feel no stress there. Had some rainy days, I got sick of getting wet hair. Found a peaceful place and it's giving me the best care. Hey, yo, I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race. You can see it in my face when the needle breaks.
Every time.
So I need some space. I've been trying to take my mind to a peaceful place.
I've been trying.
But my demons race, you can see it in my face.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and Yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.